control. He also said covert operations to stop Allende from becoming president would be, quote, worse than useless. Any indication that we are behind a legal Mickey Mouse or some hard-nosed play exacerbate relations even further. I'm afraid we'll be repeating the errors we made in 59 and 60 when we drove Fidel Castro into the Soviet camp. You also quote Kissinger's top aide on Latin America, Viren Vaki, who wrote in a top-secret cable, it's far from given that wisdom would call for covert action programs. The consequences could be disastrous. The cost-benefit-risk ratio is not favorable. Peter Kornblum.
That's my point. There were people inside the U.S. government pressing Kissinger not to take this course, and he completely shunted them aside, pushed Nixon forward to as aggressive but covert a policy as possible to make Allende fail, to destabilize Allende's ability to govern, to create what Kissinger called a coup climate. In the new edition of the Pinochet file, we have the actual transcript of Nixon and Kissinger's conversation, their first phone conversation after the coup took place, in which Nixon says to Kissinger, well, our hand doesn't show in this one, does it? And Kissinger said, we didn't do it, referring to direct participation in the coup. We helped them. He says, I mean, we helped them. Blank, which I'm sure is a reference to the CIA, created the conditions as best as possible. And this is the first conversation between Nixon and Kissinger after the coup. They're basically laying out the role of the United States in creating a coup climate in Chile, facilitating the coup. But it's even worse. This was long before your program existed, but Richard Nixon is already complaining about the liberal crap in the media. And Kissinger says, yeah, the media is bleeding because a communist government was overthrown. They, you know, like as if the media is on the side of Allende. They're focusing on the atrocities that are taking place. And Kissinger says, in the Eisenhower period, we would be heroes.
In this last minute, Juan Garces, it is interesting, though, you experienced the intensity of what happened 40 years ago with Salvador Allende ultimately killing himself in the palace as the bombs rained down. You are focused on today and what is happening today. You brought Pinochet to justice. You had Baltasar Garzon, through the famous Spanish judge, issue an arrest warrant for him when he took a visit to London, and he was held there, although ultimately sent back to Chile. What lesson can we learn in this last 25 seconds? And we'll continue the conversation after the show.
It's a matter of how do you understand the world should go, through peaceful means or using bombs and invasions. The law is very clear. Since 1945, the United Nations Charter, after a big world war, decided that the sovereignty and independence of the country should be respected, and that all the nations should fight to avoid genocidal policies.
We have to leave it there, but part two we'll post at democracynow.org. Juan Garces, Spanish lawyer, ex-aide to Salvador Allende, and Peter Kornblum, the latest book, The Pinochet File. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
This is Donna with your WUSB concert billboard for Monday, September 9th. The Jen Chapin Trio will be at the Grounds and Sounds Cafe in East Setauka, 8 p.m. Zane Carney will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2. Ready in 10 will be the Nutty Irishman in Bayshore. Your concert billboard for Tuesday, September 10th. The Festival of New Trumpet Music will be taking place at Roulette in Brooklyn. Stone Temple Pilots and Filter will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m. Brad Yoder and Carrie Cooper will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2. Nick Hargreaves will be at the Rodeo Bar in Manhattan, 8 p.m. Live Art Fusion featuring Skojo Jam will be at KJ Farrell's in Belmore. Looking ahead to Wednesday, Amber Ferrari will be at Harborfront Park in Port Jefferson, 8 p.m. Tune in each day to hear where your favorites are playing, or maybe try something different. The online concert billboard at WUSB.FM has schedules for months ahead, so you can know what to look forward to. And look for WUSB Concert Billboard Group on Facebook for any last-minute shows.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, what's up?
Well, what's up? Maybe Russia spoiled the plans for the war. What do you think about that?
I think it's what we all wanted, really.
Yeah, well, you know, it's looks like something might have actually happened that's worth celebrating. We'll see. Obama's addressing the nation tonight at 9 o'clock. And we'll find out if maybe this thing can be averted. According to this New York Times report that I'm just reading now for the first time, the United States will begin working with its allies at the United Nations. Yes, they still have some. To explore the viability of a Russian plan to avert military action against Syria by having the international community take control of the Syrian chemical weapons stockpile. And that was Russia's idea, and people seem to think it's a good idea. Actually, Obama is listening, and you know, I think that's a smart move on his part because clearly, there's a lot of opposition to this in this country, and it would be a very unpopular move. But how do you back out of that gracefully? This might be the way.
Absolutely. I just hope that it doesn't turn into a big discussion about how he dropped the ball on an invasion.
Oh, of course it will. Of course it will. Be blamed for everything. That's what they do. But it's so crazy watching. I've been just looking at this over the last week, and you see how Republicans really want to support dropping bombs and firing missiles at another country, but they really don't want to support Obama either. So, you know, people like McCain are saying, yeah, we'll support it, but it's not going to pass, but we'll support it. Because I think secretly they don't want it to pass. They want Obama to look weak and embarrassed and all that kind of thing. So I just wonder what they're going to think about this, about Russia stepping in and coming up with what I think is a perfectly reasonable solution to the whole thing, which is, okay, let's get rid of the chemical weapons. That's what you want, right? Let's, you know, round them all up and have the international community hopefully destroy them. And, well, at least that part of the problem is solved. You still have a war going on where over 100,000 people have died, but apparently that's not enough to get the U.S. Upset. It's just when they use a particular type of weapon that has been banned, that's something that warrants invasion or dropping bombs or intervention of one sort or another. They all pretty much are closely related.
Yeah, they all do pretty much the same thing in the end.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll find out what happens. I don't think under the Bush administration, though, I don't think they would have even talked to Russia. I don't think they would have entertained the idea that, well, maybe there is a solution to this. Maybe there is a way to avoid actually going in militarily. They seem kind of insulted by the fact that that the spotlight has been taken away from them. You know, Kerry is still kind of like, well, we could still do it, you know. We could still launch missiles, even if the Congress votes against it and the people don't want it and the world community is against it. You know, we can still do it. It's so weird when you think about it, though. We're going against international law because Syria has broken international law. You know, we're basically breaking international law to enforce international law. And that's what we're doing. If we don't have the okay of the United Nations to do this, that pretty much makes it illegal.
Yeah.
Internationally, that is.
I don't think we're going to do it. I don't think we'd do that at this point.
You don't think so? Make it really interesting or bet $50 on it or something?
I'm not a betting person, no.
Well, but you wouldn't be after this because you might lose.
I never lose.
Well, that sounds like a betting man to me. Let's just say, gentleman's bet, that means you can't refuse, $50. You say that, which one did you say, that we will go in or we won't go in?
Without international permission. I mean, I get what you're saying. I agree that it's you don't break laws, international laws, to enforce international laws. It makes no sense just because you think you're you know, you have a better, snappier dressers or something. I don't know. Uh-huh. But at this point, given this news, I don't think that it would be really wise. Or not wise, but I just don't see our country invading at this point, given that.
Well, we'll see, I guess. I'm sure something else will come up down the road that will mean that, well, we have to do something now. We have to do something about that. And I guess we'll just have to wait to see what that actually is. But for now, hopefully, this crisis was averted. But yeah, you know, 100,000 people, that's not an issue. That's not something that is worthy of international condemnation or something unified. But as soon as this happens, yeah, that you have to move immediately. But my theory on this or suggestion is that the U.S. wanted to send a message, right, to Syria that this is going to be taken very, very seriously. And the U.S. has basically brought a lot of countries to the brink of military action. And I think Syria has noticed this.
Mm-hmm.
Might one say that in fact is a message, that kind of reaction, that kind of strong talk? Do you think the Syrian government, Syrian regime, would use chemical weapons again, having seen that reaction? So would it not serve the same purpose to simply say, all right, don't do that again? Do you think they'd actually do it again after seeing that kind of a reaction? What I'm saying is, you know, it could save a few thousand lives, maybe, by not moving in, even without this Russian proposal, and have the same effect.
Yeah, I think that scaring them is a good thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. Like, that was the point. I think giving them a good scare, and I don't think they're going to do it again as a result. I think that was the tactic.
Yeah, of course you'd be called a wimp for doing something like that, for not following through and being pushed around by the Syrians.
Well, it didn't scare them as much as it did the rest of the world and a lot of people in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it angered them, too. It's weird to see Tea Partiers and left-wingers sort of agreeing on something. But basically the anti-war movement and the far right are united on this one front. And I'm all for that. You know, if it achieves the objective, which is to stop this before it gets any worse, then by all means, we should support that kind of an alliance. So before all this happened, and this just happened in the last day or so, like I said, people like McCain were predicting that it wasn't going to go through. Our friend Representative Peter King here from New York was saying the same thing, saying that the votes weren't there. He was, you know, this is... You showed me this. He was in Boston on Friday, and New Hampshire, and one has to ask, why is he going into New England and touring around? Turns out that nincompoop, I say that as a compliment because I could say so many worse things, is actually considering running for president in 2016. Can you believe that? New York, this is what we produce. This is what we're going to show to the country. Peter King. You know, this is the guy who thinks that Glenn Greenwald should be arrested, the journalist who is reporting on the Snowden case. He thinks, and all kinds of gems like that throughout the year, throughout the years, many years. This guy is on the Foreign Intelligence Committee. Is that the right name for it? I don't, you know, that's really a contradiction in terms as far as he's concerned. Making decisions, giving advice on things that he really has no conception of and certainly no intelligent opinion as far as I'm concerned. And it really tears me up these from Long Island on top of everything else. Weighing a run for the White House in 2016. Guys, get your petitions out there. Come on, if he's running, anyone can run, right? There's people here at the station I'm sure would do a much better job. You know, there's people in the mall that will do a better job. There's people, yeah, in all kinds of institutions throughout the country that would shine over the likes of Peter King. Wow.
Perhaps specifically people that are institutionalized.
Yeah, maybe. He has served 11 terms. No, I almost said 11 years, which would be long enough. 11 terms in Congress, which I think is 22 years, two years per term. And actually considering going for the White House in 2016. I'm going to look at it. I will go on speaking on the issues, see who enters the race, and take it from there. He has a history of flirting with higher office. He weighed entering the 2000, 2004, and 2010 races for U.S. Senate. He eyed a potential campaign for governor in 2010. But you know what? He just never had the guts. He never had the guts to follow through. And I challenge Peter King. If you really have what it takes, run. Become the candidate. Become the Republican candidate in 2006. I want him to become the candidate.
Right.
If he's the candidate, I'll either leave the country the year after when he gets elected, or it'll be a shoo-in for whoever's running against him. Not that I think there's much of a difference between Republican and Democrat. I mean, this latest fiasco with Syria should show you that more than anything. You see all these Democrats supporting war now because their guy is leading the charge. And they will actually lead this country into another war so that their candidate looks good. That is what they will do. That's politics for you. But I still think that a Democratic candidate would be a better choice than a Republican candidate in most cases. But in many cases, there's also not much of a discernible difference. So anyway, I gotta put this story away because it scares me. Peter King running for president. President King? What would that sound like? It would confuse people, for one thing. Is he a president or is he a king? You know, there's that. But also, the guy's an idiot. I'll say it.
Have faith in the fact that the electorate is younger and smarter.
Okay, yeah. So, we have the iPhone generation that's going to be making these decisions, and they'll make the right ones?
Yes.
Yeah, they voted for more surveillance. They're the ones surveilling themselves and helping the NSA out. So
I know. They're smart.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well,
they've got it all figured out.
We'll see about that. Here's the quote of the week. War is not a bowl of Cheerios. Yeah. General David Petraeus used to lecture Congress about battlefield geometry, sort of thing that only experts can understand. So when a military official uses a metaphor that even a three-year-old can understand, ears tend to perk up. And this was the case. It wasn't Petraeus that did this, I don't believe. This was a case when a senior official described the planned strike on Syria for using chemical weapons in the following way. If Assad is eating Cheerios, we're going to take away his spoon and give him a fork. Will that degrade his ability to eat Cheerios? Yes. Will it deter him? Maybe. But he'll still be able to eat Cheerios.
What about if he gets a knife?
I think he already has a knife. He just isn't using that right now. So why are we giving him a fork? That's what I don't understand. That's that part of the analogy I don't get. I take away his spoon and his fork, and then he has to eat Cheerios with his hands.
Yeah, because we're not giving him any weapons.
No.
The Russians are.
Are they? Yeah, I guess maybe. The official's point was, anyway, the missile strikes would limit Assad's ability to use chemical weapons. The attack would make him think twice about using them, but wouldn't eliminate the threat. I don't know why this guy wasn't named, but he was not. He's just an official. I love stories like that don't name official. So the Cheerio explanation. There you go.
Cheerio.
Yeah. We did some interesting things this week, Kyle.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did. We did. Well, we had a couple of interesting events. Well, yesterday we had an interesting thing happen in the supermarket. We basically just went in at the last minute. You know, 15 minutes before it closes, that's our style. And ran around the store picking up things that we needed. And we decided to take a human cash register over a computer. Because why? Well, you know why. I told you why. Because I said with our charm together, we will get the discount even though we don't have the loyalty card. And that happens sometimes. If you're nice to the cashier, they'll say, oh, I'll just give you the discount. They key in their own code or whatever. You can't get that from the computer. And, you know, in stores these days, sometimes there's significant price reductions. Like we picked something out that had $4 off if you had a card. We didn't have a card, but we didn't want a card. Who wants that kind of a thing? So we went to the cashier, and I think right away you started saying something charming to her, and she was in your control from that point on.
I didn't even have to say, excuse me, I got to bring my levels up here. We're doing radio, serious business, WSB Stony Brook. There were a lot of factors at play. When you buy certain things, you know, produce, things that are on sale, the loyalty card. Anyway, there were a lot of variables, and you'd mentioned the loyalty card. I didn't even have to, first of all, I didn't have to open my mouth for the charm to start, because that's just how I roll. And we immediately began discussions of her allowing us to get the loyalty card discount on the particular item I was getting. And then we proceeded to have the produce weighed, and various other items. Last minute things. I think I got some water crackers. That was just impulse buy, you know, and the entirety of it came.
Wait, before you skip to the end there, I just want to say when I got bananas, And I insisted that I get the bananas. And I just, well, the way I get bananas is I see bananas look good and I just grab them. I don't look them over. I don't second guess myself. I just grab them and I leave. The whole thing takes less than a second.
Do you mean to say you didn't use the hanging scale in the produce section?
Absolutely not. No.
So you had no idea. You didn't even calculate how much those bananas were going to cost?
I didn't even count how many bananas we had. Just basically, you know, this looks like a good bunch of bananas. That's it. I have better things to do. And that's how I roll. So, okay. Didn't know what that was going to be. We were picking out water crackers at random. There were other things. There were eggs involved and various bits of produce and things like that. So, okay, now go to when the totals were being added up.
Yeah. It added up to exactly $26.
$2600 showed up there on the display. And the cashier remarked on that, said, wow, look at that, $2,600. I think that's what she said, in fact. For those who don't know, that's the magazine that Kyle and I both work for, the Hacker Quarterly. And it's an important number in our lives. And so she's amazed by this. She's looking at the cash register saying, wow, you don't see that every day. And I was like, you know, how do I convey to her that it means more than just that? That, you know, this number is a part of our daily lives. And I'm looking at my shirt. I'm wearing a 2600 shirt today, but I wasn't wearing one yesterday. You weren't wearing one. But then I realized you had a backwards cap on, and that backwards cap was a 2600 cap. So unbeknownst to you, well, you didn't know what I was doing. I reached over and grabbed your head and just turned the hat around and said to her, look at that. And I feel bad making her faint, but it needed to be done. She needed to realize the gravity of the situation, that number means a lot. No, but really, she was pretty blown away by that. I don't think she understood why you had a hat on that said 2600 on it as well. But it's bound to be a day she'll remember forever.
And 0 cents. We were gobsmacked.
Yeah. $2600, $26.00.
That's right.
Right.
And she told us that we ought to have bought lottery tickets.
After we showed her that, indicated it.
Yeah,
it's too bad Lotto's closed because, wow, you really should move with those numbers.
It was awesome.
It was pretty good, yeah. That was one thing. That's just one of those little things that happens, and somehow it happens to us a lot. But there was something even grander that we did in the last week. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes.
Okay. You have no recollection, do you?
I don't even know where I am now.
These things just, yeah, you sound like you don't know. Did you like sniff something on the way in here? Because you were fine until you walked through the door.
Yeah, underclassmen.
Okay, all right. Well, that'll do it. So it literally went right over your head, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
That was a clue, Kyle. That was a clue. If you can't figure it out by now, I'm going to have to tell the story for you. Yeah, right over your head. No. South Shore Beach.
Oh,
he remembers now.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Aye, laddie.
Okay. You want to tell the story before we grow old?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we plan to see the launch of the Laddie spacecraft, which was launched from a retrofitted ICBM, or it was an ICBM motor in a retrofitted spacecraft.
Okay, you're saying a lot of words here that I think most people don't know what we're talking about, won't know what we're talking about. So, Laddie, okay, ICBM, what?
Okay, NASA launched Laddie from Wallops with an ICBM motor.
You know, you got a patronizing tone to our listeners there. You know, they're intelligent people.
All right. Oh, no, there's this moon dust researching spacecraft called Laddie, L-A-D-E-E, and it's a NASA vehicle that was being launched from the Wallops space center or whatever the heck it is in Virginia.
Yeah, it's Virginia.
And it's not ordinarily a launching site, but it's beginning to be a launch site for a number of reasons. So basically, because this propulsion system was an ICBM motor, rocket engine that had been retrofitted, at the behest of Russia, this craft was to be launched from Wallops.
Wait, Russia again? Russia is always suggesting that we do things in a certain way. I'm seeing a theme here.
Yeah, well, there's only a couple countries that have ICBMs, and these are the these are called ICBMs, or intercontinental ballistic missiles. And back in the old days, With like the Reagan years and the Cold War and stuff, ICBMs were the big threat because it's basically a missile that goes way up out into the stratosphere, past basically into the edge of the stratosphere into outer space. It goes up and orbits and then comes back down over the target, and it's basically out of control. You can't really intercept it once it's in space.
Okay, so now I've heard about ICBMs, obviously. I don't know a whole lot about military targeting and things like that. But have ICBMs ever been used in wartime things?
I'm not sure that ICBMs were ever launched. They might have been tested, but I don't think they've ever been used in a aggressive, like an offensive maneuver. I could be very, very wrong about that. I'm so green with knowing about all these kinds of weapons, but I do know a bit. So this is something you wouldn't ordinarily see or wouldn't ordinarily want to see because it means bad stuff's going to happen. So Russia, I mean, you can understand that countries that have access to ICBMs would probably say like, yeah, you know, if you want to go ahead and like launch that, why don't you go ahead and do it over here? Because we'd like to watch too and just make sure that it's actually what are you guys doing? Moon dust? Yeah, great. Your ICBM, it needs to go that way.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's what happened. It was launched from Wallops. And
late at night, too, like 11:30 at night.
Wasn't that great? Yeah. So we caught wind of this and basically went to, South Shore.
Went to Smith Point Beach.
A top secret beach.
No, it wasn't top secret. It's the biggest beach around. But the thing is, I wasn't sure if we were allowed to go on the beach at night. And it's the stupidest thing that you would have to worry about walking on a beach when a beach. How can they close a beach? You can't close the ocean. But there were signs saying park closes at dusk, and there were cops like on the beach and patrol cars. So we had to basically sneak onto the beach and go to a place that wasn't brilliantly lit by sodium vapor lights and just sort of camp out there for about an hour, getting our bearings and just waiting for this thing to happen.
Yeah, and we did actually get a pretty good clear view of the sky. And in fairness, I went on patrol. I mean, I was really... I was doing kind of a neighborhood watch thing on the beach, and I did throw away one plastic bottle.
I didn't know that.
I did.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So the place we sat was just out of the light so that we didn't have a lot of pollution, light pollution. So we were able to look up, and we did get a pretty clear view and even could see a bit of the Milky Way. So if you don't watch the stars a lot, that's a good condition.
Yeah, it was a clear night. It was a really clear night. And I was looking at fortunately, I remember that this was happening. It was last Thursday night, was it?
Yes.
I just remember that this is the night, and we have to go someplace where it's clear. I almost went to the North Shore, and you said, no, you should go to the South Shore because it's launching from Virginia. That's where it's going to be visible. And sure enough, that was the right place to be. So basically these things are going to launch like clockwork because, well, unless they cancel it altogether, it's going to launch when it says it's going to launch, 11:27 p.m. Mm-hmm. And so we've got, our phones, we're looking at the time, 11:26. Okay. Turn the phone off so it doesn't light up the beach and we can see the thing. And I saw down in the southwestern sky over the water, all of a sudden this red dot, I wasn't expecting it to be red, but it was red. And it was slowly rising, and you said, that's it.
There were flames.
There were. It was flaming like you would not believe. I mean, it was basically, imagine just seeing a very bright star, but with a long streak behind it. I did not think we'd actually see the streak behind it. But it was literally the most incredible thing. I've seen comets in the sky. I've seen many shooting stars and planets, and I've seen the space station and the space shuttle many times. But this was absolutely unbelievable. Seeing a rocket from so far away going up into the sky with the flames behind it. And I realized this afterwards. I didn't mention this to you, but it was the first time I ever actually witnessed something leaving the Earth and not coming back.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that. Not from a launch, from a launch to basically its final trajectory. Until it disappears. I've never seen something like that. I've seen things that were launched, but I've never actually watched. Planes, I guess, count a little, but it's not the same thing. It's not at all the same thing. And we were able to see both stages. We saw both stages. I think there were two stages of the propulsion system fire. And I don't know where the moon was. I don't know if it was waxing or waning or where we're at in the
moon was new. The moon was exactly where it should be, out of sight, out of mind, not interfering for once in its damn life. I'm sorry. I just have a problem with the moon.
Well, I don't know what it was about it, but the smoke, as you said, the trail was lit a little bit, or else our eyes had adjusted. And basically, we were able to see this trail, and it looked just like, I mean, with the adjustment, you're able to see the smoke trail just like you'd see something go overhead in the daytime or something.
Yeah.
And it sort of hangs there in the sky after, long after the rocket itself, Laddie, had left sort of our vision, and it just sort of flickered out, and it went up about, like, what, 20 degrees, and then went sort of across the sky.
It winked out, and you said it's going to come back because it's going to be the second stage or the third stage.
I thought there would be a third stage, but I think it's only two stages.
Okay, and then it did come back. There it is again, all lit up. And, you know, I guess people just didn't know about this. There were a couple other people on the beach. I'm not sure if they were watching that. I imagine they probably were. But something like that, you'd think people would be crowded watching, because this is history. This is amazing. This is the kind of thing that you remember for the rest of your life. And it's sad that we had to sneak onto a beach and feel like we were intruding just to witness this amazing event.
Yeah, I think there were like three or four people that were maybe on that beach as well, picking up trash for the authorities. But anyway, besides that, it was vacant, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's really crazy that people aren't aware of this and don't appreciate it, because that's amazing stuff. And in fact, in 2 weeks, Orbital Sciences Corporation is going to be launching a vessel that's going to ISS.
Is it going from WALPS as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So
all
that
right.
also will be visible, which is really neat. It's like, what the heck? All of a sudden, the Northeast here has turned into like what Kennedy's Space Center is down in Florida.
And you could only see it in the Northeast, too. You couldn't see it in Florida. It just didn't go down that far. You couldn't see it out west at all. There's a little window that was able to see it, and we were in there. And it was crystal clear at night, so I don't, you know, maybe the moon will be out next time. Maybe it won't be as clear. I'm just glad we did it when we did it, and something I'll always remember.
And a fantastic way to see an ICBM used.
Yes, the best way.
The best and only way you'd want to see an ICBM used.
Wow. We're going to take phone calls a little bit later, 631-632-6901. I think many of our listeners are out there. Sometimes they actually want to talk to us. Here's one that sent us a nice email. You guys are doing some great radio, especially lately. I love the road trips. A couple of fun facts you might want to know. The TV Indian test pattern, we mentioned this, of the 1950s and probably before, is an homage to Native Americans. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess maybe it is. It's the Indian chief on the TV. So you don't see test patterns anymore, do you?
Like Sacagawea?
Yeah, Sacagawea.
Chief Seattle.
Yeah, and basically, Kat here says Native Americans, that is. Indian test pattern. I guess that's not the way to say it these days.
That's the colloquial way.
Well, it is Indian. That's what it's known as.
Right.
But they precogged television. The Pineapple Express gets its name from the fact that there was a weather flow from Hawaii up north to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I like that. No, probably. I'm glad that Kat pointed that out. Because
Kat continues. Please continue. You guys are the best.
Aren't we?
Yes. No argument there. And Chris writes in, say, hey, guys, I think there should be a parallel to that rule where anyone who brings up Hitler and the Nazis loses the debate. It's Godwin's law. Michael Godwin, used to be from the EFF, made that law. This time, anyone who uses a schoolyard bullying experience to justify military action automatically loses the argument. And that was from a quote we were reading a week or two ago from, who was that? Well, actually, we just brought it up, C-SPAN. We put it on live on the air, and the guy was giving that analogy of how he beat the feathers out of a schoolyard bully with a 2x4, I think.
This was like a Syria analogy. This was during the discussions, I believe, not Senate. It was
a Senate Foreign Relations Committee, I think.
Was it? Yeah.
I don't really keep track. I've got better things to do with my life than figure out who's on what committee.
Word.
It might be the one that Peter King is a part of, which is another reason why I wouldn't want to watch it. But Yeah, it's basically it's a good point. It's a good point because people are making the most ridiculous excuses for getting seriously involved in this conflict and not doing anything to really bring it to an end.
Yeah, and it's terrible. Like, two F-words that really don't have a lot to do with chemical weapons.
No, if you have a bully in school and you hit him with a 2x, I don't know if that's really going to improve the situation much.
I don't know anyone who's dealt with bullies in school with 2x4s.
Yeah, it's a great story. Great story. It makes you feel like, you know, you'll be able to intimidate people with the use of force, but it just tends to lead to more conflict and bigger conflict and not really addressing the issues. All right. Speaking of conflict, you hear about the 107-year-old in Arkansas. My God.
Oh, my God.
You think it's funny, huh? You think it's funny to have a guy shot by the
no.
cops? No. Yeah. Well, everyone laughs when you mention this.
No, that was – I had a hiccup.
Uh-huh. A 107-year-old Arkansas man was killed by SWAT officers who responded to calls about a domestic disturbance. Incident happened Saturday night in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where Monroe Isidore had pointed a gun at two people inside a home. Those two people left the home, but Isidore remained inside. And when police identified themselves, he opened fire through the door of a bedroom where he had taken refuge. Police called for backup and began negotiating with Isidore. SWAT officers used a camera to verify that he was armed with a handgun. SWAT inserted gas into the room after it was evident negotiations were unsuccessful in the hopes that Isidore would surrender peacefully. When the SWAT team broke into the bedroom, Isidore shot at officers, leading police to return fire, and he was killed. Interesting story. It's been reported a lot in the mass media. First of all, 107. That's incredible right there. But what's even more incredible is the absurdity of having to kill somebody for a reason like this. First of all, look at the story. He pointed a gun at two people inside a home. We're not talking about a hostage situation. We're talking about pointing a gun, which is not good, but it's not the same thing as a hostage situation. The two people left the house. They left. They were gone.
Yeah.
It wasn't an issue anymore. He was inside by himself with a gun, a pistol, too. I'm not sure how many bullets a pistol holds. I don't really care. But the point is, it's not like he had a semi-automatic rifle that could or whatever. I'm going to get corrected on this. But
it's probably a revolver.
Something that could fire many, many, many times. Whatever. The point is, 107 years old, he's alone in his house. And from the stories that I am now hearing from people who live in the neighborhood, he was deaf and he was legally blind. So he couldn't hear people saying things to him. And he was just aware of people coming into his place. And he was firing things at them. But here's the thing, okay? If he was completely out of his mind and actually was firing at people knowing that he was doing that, he's 107 years old. All right, he's going to fall asleep at some point. No, I'm not kidding. He is not going to be able to stay up for very long. Why do these situations have to be forced where you have to resolve them right now? There's no room for sitting back and letting things take their course. He was of no threat to anybody unless they actually were stupid enough to walk inside. And they just simply had to monitor the situation until it resolved itself. But cops, SWAT teams, they don't seem to be trained to do that. And it's a real shame that we see so many cases like this. I mean, yeah, you must obey the police. You must do what they tell you. I think that's nonsense because they're humans, too. They make bad decisions and stupid mistakes, as do all of us. And, yeah, it was probably stupid for whatever it was he was doing. Certainly stupid for a 107-year-old guy who was deaf and blind to have a gun in the first place. But stupid is what is the backbone of this country. So that's not going to change. I just hope people think twice about this. This is not something that needed to happen. It's like so many cases like this.
Yeah, I absolutely I basically thought, like, it's ridiculous. They have the information. The fact that they're, like, putting smoke and tear gas, like, into the room, and they had a robot and all this information, like, why on earth could they have just waited? Could they not have waited it out? And why didn't they have, like, counselors or somebody else that could handle a situation?
Right.
I mean, a 107-year-old is not, I mean, not really, really going to, I mean, he's probably more upset and scared, probably needs emergency services, like a rescue, like a fire or some kind of EMT to calm him down, because he's got this army paramilitary police squad throwing robots and things in his room. I mean, and how come, where was the family? Like, how come they couldn't explain the situation before the cops go in and, like, have to punish and you know, diffuse the situation right then and there? It's just so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, it's just a great opportunity to do target practice and exercise and then make it a write-off or something.
Also, continuing with guns and stupidity, which I think should be a regular feature, remember this bill that got passed back in 2009? Actually, Senator Tom Coburn offered this gun provision as an amendment that said that you have every right to carry a gun in a federal park, a national park, federal wildlife area.
Yeah.
As long as federal, state, and local laws are obeyed. And the Senate passed the bill. It was a close vote, 90-5. And the measure also passed the House. President Obama signed it. Everybody loved this bill so much. It took effect in February 2010. And Saturday, a 3-year-old shot herself with a gun. I don't know if it was her gun. I don't know if it was her stupid parents' gun. But the point is, it was readily available. And this is the kind of thing that happens when you make things readily available. People make stupid decisions. They're careless. And you can expect more things like this wherever you allow these things to happen.
Was it accidental or was she, like, depressed about
something? You know, I didn't really probe that deeply. But it changes the dynamic of everything you do when you allow these death weapons to be everywhere, and you don't know where they are, you don't keep track of them.
They're very unforgiving tools.
Yeah, they really are. Here's another example. This is a really bad example. Well, it's a good example, but it's a bad story. This is a story of a prank went wrong, or a prank gone wrong. I'm not sure what the proper way to say that is. 18-year-old high school track star tragically shot and killed after jumping out of a closet to scare a friend. Yeah, the girl was returning home with her 12-year-old cousin around 8 p.m. on Friday when she decided to play a prank on a friend. You might have done something like that in the past. I think we all have.
Uh-huh.
She was with I haven't introduced the guy yet who shot her. The guy who shot his brother, his 15-year-old brother, and her friend, the 21-year-old. They entered the house. I guess the brother let them in. It was her brother. Okay, her 15-year-old brother. They somehow entered the house. I guess they did that kind of thing, or maybe it was breaking and entering. I don't know. The gun enthusiast will say, yeah, it was breaking and entering, and she got what she deserved. But no, that's not the way you're supposed to live your life. Sometimes you go into somebody's house. It does happen. It has happened. And you surprise them there. I mean, that's happened I didn't want to kill somebody because they did that. It's just...
So it wasn't their house?
It wasn't their house, no. It was not their house.
But they're close enough, like, they know how to get in, they're familiar with, like, where the closets are, and they can anticipate where this person might walk, and, you know, they could play a funny
You don't
joke.
Know what kind of relationship they had.
Sure.
So she jumped out of the closet to scare him, and he immediately shot her. And, you know, the other thing you gotta want, he's always carrying a gun on him to do just that, you know? That's the danger of always carrying a gun on you, is that when you get surprised, you're going to react and do something that's wrong. So, she didn't survive that episode. And what you wind up with a country where people are afraid to pull pranks on each other or surprise each other or upset each other because you never know what the reaction will be. And we're all sort of walking around on eggshells, wondering when someone's going to snap. It's not healthy. Maybe Iowa has the answer. I was talking about how blind people shouldn't have guns. They disagree. Iowa is issuing gun permits to the blind. The permits allow legally blind applicants to purchase weapons and carry them in public. Per state law, any attempt to deny an Iowan these rights based on physical ability would be illegal. When you shoot a gun, you take it out and point and shoot. I don't necessarily think eyesight is necessary, said Michael Barber, a blind man, interviewed by the Des Moines Register at a gun store in Iowa last month. I could go on reading more, but I think the point has been made. Yeah, we have arrived at this point in our history, folks, where the blind are demanding the right to have guns and to fire them at will, and the law protects that. And I'll probably get all kinds of hate mail for saying that that might not be the best idea. What are you going to do? All right, I'm going to go into delay. We're going to see if any people are out there to talk with us about any of these issues or different issues. Again, the phone number is 631-632-6901. We'll be back right after this.
Don't touch that dial. You're listening to 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook.
And we're back right after that, like we said. Phone number 631-632-6901. We seem to have a bunch of phone calls. Let's take this one. And good evening. You're on off the wall. Yes, that's the right show.
Yeah, off the wall, off the hook on both.
Yeah.
We're both. 2600, that's a great story with the bananas. you know, let's do a little Long Island. I'm really surprised that Steve Israel was beating the drums and saying, oh, we should just do this attack. I thought he was like a Peter King for a second. It was just a couple days earlier I heard Peter King saying on Long Island News, yeah, we should just attack, and because he's not attacking, he's showing weakness to other countries, and, you know, they don't have the evidence. It should have been done in The Hague, the International Court. We're not the police, or are we?
Yeah, we seem to think we are.
We think we're. Peter King used to go to fundraisers for the Republican Party during the Guantanamo and Bush Iran thing. Iraq? Let's not get it wrong. And he'd say, oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with holding the guy's head underwater for a little while. And all
you sound
think,
just
you know,
like him. Wow.
We think he's a terrorist. Or
he,
to get the,
that's how he sounds.
It doesn't work on paper.
Amazing.
And all he was doing was putting on a little thug coat to go along with the Bushes. He doesn't have an original thought. He is not a leader. He's not bright enough. And he should never, never be allowed. The other thing is, Abby Hoffman said in his Chicago 7 trial, they said to him, what's your address? He said, my address is America, and it's not a location like an address on the street. It's a state of mind. So I don't think this congressman and that senator and this senator necessarily key into my zip code. I've got 50 states that I'm an American in that I suggest we all write all 50 states congressmen and senators and call them when we don't think we should go into Syria, because the story is the Syrians didn't do it, and we don't have proof. They just wanted to go in, and they planned it, and it's on paper from years ago, and the next country, and the next country, and the next country. Go ahead, say it isn't so, guys, in D.C. Go ahead, say it isn't so. You know, mm-hmm. Emmanuel?
Yes, yes.
It's just pathetic. It's the same old story. And one more thing for Long Island, a banger. On Lackawanna Lane in Stony Brook, close friends that lived at Sutton Place South, a wonderful address in the city, were Christian Scientists, and they bought a summer house on Lackawanna Lane. Who was their close friend? Liz and Ed Harmon. Their name wasn't Harmon, it's Orman. I know Liz and Ed, and their son Charlie. Charlie's wife was on Amy's show this week because there's a new book about the Chile Allende story. And you know what? That's just wrong, and it wasn't Chileans. Who was down there? Our military, our intelligence, lying to this man and that man. I suggest you watch the movie Missing.
Yes.
With Sissy Spacek and Jack Lemmon. It's a real statement about how we do. They're like, hey, who do you think you are? We got spices and interest down here. Spices? Spices. Okay.
Yeah. And ITT, too. Don't forget their involvement.
Yeah. And they just had American guys running around like crazy, running the whole show. You think Chile was running the show once we got there? Mm-hmm. Not, absolutely not. And they just killed this guy and disappeared him and threw lefts and rights and lies and lies and lies and made a mockery of Ed Harmon. And I love Ed and Liz Harmon, and they're wrong. They're wrong. And those people were beautiful, spiritual people in whatever religion they wanted. Mm-hmm. I know firsthand. The Adlers were their, Roy Adler was their friend. He was, and this is funny, his license plate was NYCOP. I thought it was New York cop, and I knew he wasn't a cop. It's a special position in the Christian Science Church. I'm not a Christian Scientist. I'm a Christian. And I'm also 2600.
All right. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. Thanks thanks for your call. All right. Take care. Let's go to another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing? You know what? I don't want to stay on the phone too much longer, but did I miss you guys talking about the
mayoral race in New York City? No, because we are not actually in New York City, but it is an interesting conversation, and I guess tonight is the night that they decide who the Democratic candidate will be and who the Republican candidate will be, and the election will be in November, but it's widely thought the Democratic candidate will win.
Yeah.
Is there any development today that is worthy of note?
Well, actually, no. I was looking in the local. Actually, I'm lying. It was the Daily News, I think it was, and they were talking about what each candidate has and what each candidate has to offer. And I drew a blank. I didn't really know. I live on Long Island, but I'm saying if I lived in New York, I would say to myself in the city, I wouldn't know what to do, to be honest with you, because I think a lot of them are just, it's rubbish. I was just gonna, I would vote for a ham sandwich.
Well, okay, they might win.
a turkey on rye.
Right. Well, the important thing is that we're not gonna have Bloomberg anymore.
There are a lot of people who actually, who are not too keen on him, and you're right.
But a lot of people thought Christine Quinn would be the front runner. Now she was a couple of months ago by a long shot, and now she's in, I think, third place. Bill de Blasio is likely to be the leader. Whether he wins outright tonight and doesn't force a runoff is that's why I guess we find out tonight. He's supposedly more liberal, and what's interesting is he's gotten more of the African American vote than the African American candidate, which it doesn't surprise me. Bill Thompson was not able to connect, and black people don't vote as one monolithic mass, something that white people need to learn.
True.
And Anthony Weiner, the less said about him, the better, probably.
Yeah, he sort of kind of dug his own grave with the whole him and what's the other guy's name that can't keep his pants on? What's his name, Spitzer?
Yeah, well, Spitzer is actually very intelligent and has a lot to say, and his indiscretions, I think, pale in comparison next to Weiner, who really just can't seem to control himself.
Yeah, I always wondered about that, though, because, some people, a lot of, I was talking to my neighbor, and she was telling me, he's a womanizer. I'm saying, yeah, but, let's just think if he did do any of that nonsense, him or Weiner, if neither one of them did it, they kept it where they were supposed to, that would have been a pretty interesting race.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, it's the way it goes.
It would have been. Hey, listen, we're out of time, but thanks for calling, and we'll watch that race tonight.
All right, good enough then. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. I'm also going to watch the presidential address at 9 o'clock. It's going to be a busy night.
Yes.
But, today is also a day in history, and we always like to mark history. It was exactly 22 years ago today that a band named Nirvana quietly released a single in advance of an album which was going to be released in the autumn. The forthcoming album was called Come As You Are, and the song, which, as I said, was released rather quietly, it smells like Teen Spirit. No significant promotion. They were hoping it would begin building awareness of the new album among listeners to college and alternative radio. And that's exactly what happened. And the song became a mega hit. Now, we're not going to play the song tonight, as you might know it. What we are going to do is, would you like to describe it, Kyle?
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite songs ever. I really like Nirvana, and I grew up on this stuff, but this album, and I like a lot of the Unplugged stuff, but this song has been remastered, kind of rejuvenated, and what the, label or whomever has access to the stuff, what they did is they took just the vocal track from multi-track recordings of the actual sessions. And, you can hear other parts of different songs, and a bunch of different songs have been released like this lately, but in this case, we're going to hear just the vocals.
And you can see what an amazing singer Kurt Cobain was by listening to just the vocals and not hearing the actual music. Sound kind of weird, but, it really, I think, will knock your socks off. So,
I think a lot of people know these lyrics and will sing along. I know I will and do.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll move out of the studio so Finn can start his show right afterwards, because otherwise, he might have to physically remove you. Write to us, please. otw@2600.com is our email address. We'll see you again next week. Here's Kurt.
Load up on guns, Bring your friends, it's fun to lose and to pretend she's overborn and self-assured. I know a dirty word.
Hello, 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 hello.
I'm worse at what I do best, and for this gift I feel blessed. A little group has always been and always will until the end.
Hello, 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 hello. Yay!
And I forget just why I taste so, yeah, I guess it makes me smile. I found it hard, was hard to find. Well, whatever, never mind.
Hello, 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 hello.
Thank you. Yeah, man, it's Finn with you until 9 p.m. on WUSB Stony Brook. This is Finn's Revolution. I'm tired. I'm beaten up. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be strange, and it's going to be beautiful. Stay tuned.
Sky, the life flickers on. Tell me when.
Yeah.
Disappear.